All recording lines have joined the conference. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is the Policy and Implementation Working Group call on the 16th of July, 2014. On the call today, we have Michael Graham, Cheryl Langdon Orr, Bill Karnofsky, Alan Greenberg, J. Scott Evans, Tom Barrett, and Stephanie Perrin. We have apologies from Chuck Domes, Olivia Kwame, Wolf Ulrich Nobin, and Klaus Stoll. From staff, we have Marika Koning, Mary Wong, Steve Chan, and myself, Terry Agnew. I'd like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and back over to you, J. Scott.
Hello, everyone. This is J. Scott. I want to welcome you to our meeting. This is the July 16th meeting of the Policy Implementation Group. We've just had a roll call. I would ask if anybody has any changes to their statement of interest.
And, Jay Scott, I will have one. This is Michael Graham for the record. I will be submitting that by the end of the week.
Okay, great. I also note that I went in and looked at mine recently, and it had been updated, but it had not been, they had just reprinted a lot of the old information. So I would suggest to everyone that it might be a good time in the next week or so just to go back through. It's listed on our wiki under the members of the working group. You can click on it, and it'll lead you to your statement of interest. You have to log in to make any edits, but I would suggest that, you know, you might want to look at that. They still have me as a member of the IPC, and I'm a member of the business constituency, and little niggly-naggly things like that. They hadn't updated some things, so I would just suggest that we all do that. Last week, we had spent some time going over the summary overview for Deliverable 1. It was a draft lessons learned that we were looking at, and there was considerable discussion on it. And based on those discussions, I think it was Greg Shatten that had raised a point that got a great deal of debate between several of our members. And you can see that Marika has gone in and has made some adjustments to the wording in accordance with those discussions. For the record, the major revision was to item 3, which now reads, if another entity, for example, working group or drafting team, is tasked by the GNSO Council to develop policy guidance, clear guidance needs to be provided by the GNSO Council on how recommendations are to be adopted if different from the standard methodology for making decisions as outlined in the GNSO Working Group Guidelines, which, as you all know, is a consensus-based model. And so I think this is just saying if there's a group that falls outside of that and it's not going to take place in that formalized structure, it needs to be clear how decisions are going to be made so that everyone is very clear on that, both within the group and also for transparency purposes to the community itself. Then also there was an amendment to number 11, the term iteration was deleted, I think, on somebody's suggestion that they weren't quite clear with what that meant. And so I think we just put in a more, additional wording that we hope would clarify what we meant, and that is to allow for feedback and revisions as guidance is developed, if it's needed. And so this was circulated to the full group, I believe, Monday afternoon and Pacific Coast time, evening for Marika, who was circulating it. And everyone was asked to review it and put in any comments. I didn't see anything on the list. I do realize that two of the participants who were having the majority of the discussion amongst the various points are not here with us today. So I would ask the group, does anyone have any additional comments with regards to this list? Understanding that this list is by no means, definitive. As we go through this process, if we believe that there are other lessons learned and we can add things to this list at any time, I think that's what the parenthetical at the top of the paper is supposed to indicate. And I see that Stephanie Perrin has raised her hand, and with that I'm going to recognize her.
Thanks very much. Can you hear me?
We can.
Hello?
Yes.
Wonderful. I've been having troubles with it lately. So I may be opening up something that you have discussed over the last couple of months, because I have not been ending because of being overloaded with the EWG work. But I'm now back, and I bring a number of questions from that EWG process, the expert working group on who is replacement. And I gather item number 3 speaks to it, but, I mean, after a year and a half of working on this, I'm still unclear how the guidance that we provided is going to be, or should be, or was expected to be adopted, discussed, implemented. That's question number 1. And question number 2, a lot of the material that is in that report that looks like implementation is wholly embedding policy. So apologies for bringing up something you've probably dealt with over the last few months, but if somebody can elucidate what's going to happen and how that little phenomenon fits, I'd love it.
Alan?
Stephanie, as usual, asks really good questions. I don't have any answers for that, but it's not applicable to number 3. It's not applicable because of the wording saying if a work group is tasked by the GNSO Council, then the GNSO Council has to provide guidance as to how it should do its work. So your questions are completely reasonable, but I don't think are relevant to this particular point.
So basically, because the GNSO Council did not task it, the board did, that makes the expert working group, where does it put it? Which constellation is it revolving around?
I can try to answer it, Alan. It's outside of the GNSO purview in terms of what it did. Now, the output from the expert working group is now going to be fed into a process in the GNSO, presumably a PDP, but I wouldn't presume to make say that's how the GNSO is going to react. It's a process which, if indeed we follow the expert working group advice, it's going to be a rather complex PDP, because not only is it going to have to be a PDP that's going to be implemented, it's a PDP that's likely going to require a significant software implementation splot in the middle of that implementation. And those things always generate policy issues, or almost always generate policy issues, as part of the process of doing the detailed design. So how the expert working group is going to evolve, whatever work we do, if we do it soon enough, will influence how that is going to be handled, but it's not entirely clear how that is going to be now, and until the GNSO starts talking about it, I don't think we'll know that. I mean, it's almost surely going to generate a PDP. It's the only major tool we have in the GNSO.
Thank you, Alan. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. First of all, I think agreeing with Alan that indeed the specific EWG falls, outside of the scope what we're looking at here, as it was separately initiated. But I did want to clarify, also triggered by Alan's comment, that a PDP on the topic has already been initiated, and basically how the EWG came into being was that the board, at the same time as requesting for an issue report on the topic, also formed the EWG to look at this issue. And the whole idea is that as a kind of expert group, their report would basically feed into the final issue report, which would then go into the phase where a working group would actually start looking at all the information, including the EWG recommendations, and see how that could potentially resolve into policy recommendations. And I think where we're currently at is that we have the EWG report, we have the preliminary issue report, so we now need to see how those two tracks come together, and as well, and that's a discussion that has already started as well at the GMSO Council level, how to break that into potentially pieces that are digestible and are able to go through a PDP process. So I just want to note that PDP is already kicked off as such, as that was a board-initiated PDP. We're now more at the phase of looking at how all those pieces come together and, indeed, how the expert working group input feeds into that process. But, again, I don't think it's specifically relevant to what we're looking at here, because here we're really looking at GMSO policy guidance process that would deal with or address issues for which a PDP would not be required. And I think as we're looking at the topics that the EWG addresses, those clearly fall within the scope of potential contractual changes, so would be required to go through a policy development process.
Okay, thank you. I see that Stephanie feels like some of this explanation has been helpful for her. So at this point, I look at these and I think that they look to be in fairly good shape. However, given that two of the people who were most vocal on last week's call are not here and that these were only circulated for a couple of days, and it is high vacation season for most folks around the world, I suggest that we, Marika, circulate these at the end of this call with the admonition that they will be considered closed out. We will not be revisiting them wholesale on every call, and any comments or concerns need to be raised via the list. Does anyone feel that that is inappropriate, or agree or disagree with that course of action? Cheryl agrees. I'm not hearing any protests. I'm seeing agrees come around. So we'll do that. Is that all right, Marika?
Yep.
Okay, good. So I guess now we can put up the deliverable one chart. So I'm going to have to increase this for my old eyes. Okay, I want to remind everybody, because as Stephanie indicated, she, along with some others, have not been here for all of our discussions. So I just want to remind everyone about what our deliverable one is. At a high level, so that when we go down and we look at these questions, we sort of are keeping in mind what our overall umbrella issue is. Because we've spent a lot of weeks in the weeds, and now I want to take us back up and before we delve back into the weeds and look at where we are. So if you'll see at the top there, it says Deliver 1 is to propose a process for developing GTLD and other ICANN policy in the form of GNSO, quote, policy development process, end of quote, and, quote, policy guidance, end of quote, and proposed criteria for determining when each would be appropriate. So that's our overall task here, so look at these questions and then decide, what's the process for determining when something has to be a PDP or when something is just getting policy guidance, and then if it is getting policy guidance, then, you know, what that process should look like for providing the policy guidance. So with that, just does anyone have any questions or concerns with that deliverable or? Okay. With that, let's go down to questions in the far left-hand column. And everyone, you can control your own page. So if you need to make it bigger, if you look down at the bottom, there are page tells you which page we're on. The arrows will take you to the previous or next page. And you can increase the size if you need to increase the size of what's in the screen. So we want to go down to D in questions in the far left-hand column. And so what we are going to do now is we need to have some discussion on these questions. We've done A, B, C. But now we need to look at D, E, and F. And so the first question on D is, what lessons can be learned from past experience? And I think we have identified those in the previous list of 13 identifies lessons learned. That's my take. Does anyone disagree or think that there's something else? Okay. So, yes, Alan.
I don't think that was a question asked in its own right, because it then breaks it down into five sub-questions.
Right, it does.
You really need to address the five sub-questions first, then see if they address the overall question.
Okay. So the first sub-question is, what are the consequences of an action being considered policy versus implementation? If you want to look at the chart that's in the annex, it's the last page in this document. You may have to blow it up even bigger than you've done everything else. You can see that for the new GTLD process, and from the staff paper, they put in a chart that sort of showed how they dealt with this issue from a staff perspective. So you see that you've got a proposed action, and then they looked at that proposed action and they asked some questions with regards to it. And depending on the question that was answered, how that question was answered was how the track that it proceeded down. Now, this was not a formal GNSO process. This was just within the staff, I think. Alan, is that a new hand?
That is a new hand.
All right.
Well, there's subtext in this question which is not said, and the question is who's doing the considering, and I think the answer is different. If something is considered policy by anyone, then it's going to generate, require the GNSO to act on it through some mechanism perhaps yet to be determined. If something is considered implementation and everyone agrees, then it gets implemented. If everyone doesn't agree, I think our experience says all hell breaks loose. So the answer is different depending on who's doing the considering.
Right. Michael?
Michael Graham for the record. I agree, and Alan's point is exactly right. I mean, it's who is making that consideration of whether or not it's policy or implementation and triggering, the response. I think, from past experience, we all know that if something is arguably policy or implementation, that's a sort of a third category that gets us all into a discussion of that rather than the actual policy or the implementation. And I guess my thought is, in asking the question, you know, since the consequences of the debate as to whether or not it's policy or implementation is that it holds up appropriate implementation and also, you know, threatens to create policy outside of a normal PDP. My question, which is not from past experience, I suppose, then becomes, well, who should be watching over this once there's a policy? We know where that goes. But once implementation occurs, who is it who is or should be considering whether or not it's policy or implementation? I'm afraid I'm getting ahead of the discussion, but I think we can put in a sort of a capsule the consequences of it being questioned as to whether or not it's policy or implementation is that it holds up everything.
Okay. I would ask that I just need a clarification. This is J. Scott Evans for the record. And then I'll get to you, Cheryl. Alan, were you stating the reality or were you stating the aspiration that when anyone decides it's policy, it has to be considered policy? Or is it just that without a defined process, that's where we are now? I'm just curious as whether you're saying where we need to end up or where we are now.
That's an interesting question. Issues have come up in the past where someone said we need a policy process to determine this, and other people have said why. This has always been implementation. It's always been handled as implementation. Does anyone really see a reason why it needs to be considered policy? And although I can't remember a specific instance, I suspect we have dropped it as policy because no one saw it as policy, even though it was hypothesized that it was, you know, presumed by someone with less of a sense of history. So okay. I would guess that, yes, the GNSO in its wisdom could say this is not policy, and then it reverts to implementation.
Okay.
But short of that, if someone thinks it's policy and the GNSO doesn't disagree, then it is policy.
Okay. At least at this stage without some sort of formal way to determine it. Okay.
Well, I think there's always going to be judgment calls in these things.
Right.
I don't think we're ever going to quantify it to such an extent we can feed it into a computer program.
Okay.
Not that, boys. Give a girl a guy.
Come on, Cheryl.
Not without a stronger Turing test than people are claiming that we now have.
Alan, stop it. Cheryl here for the record.
Yes.
It's interesting because you two have actually been discussing exactly why I put my hand up. The question being, how can these consultation mechanisms be updated to take into account input from other ACs, SOs, and the public? I think where this conversation was heading is we ask, there is a standard question or a standard trigger, and that's two different directions. You can ask the other inputters, ACs, SOs, and indeed public, if any of them care. Is it in your opinion, is this matter in your opinion new policy? Because often this will come out of the development of policy or implementation. Or you can take the lie quietly and hope nobody notices approach, but have a rule that says if someone, and that's where you were coming from, Jay Scott, if someone declares that in their opinion it is, in fact, policy, or, I guess, declares it's implementation, that then triggers a discussion to develop a consensus, and that need only be a small survey or some form of testing whether it's just one outlier or is it a genuine feeling across community with a capital C under that circumstance. View. We've got to be able to come up with a mechanism that allows it to be flagged and dealt with, because if it's just an outlier, one or two groups and or individuals getting their knickers in a knot about it, as Alan said, perhaps with a lack of history, then that's something that can be repatriated, repaired, remediated and dealt with, because you just educate those people, they understand, they agree, hopefully, and then we all move on. But if it's not, if it's the thin end of a wedge and what you're suddenly going to end up with is wholesale dissatisfaction, because the belief is it is policy, not implementation, then you may as well deal with it earlier in the process, because it's going to be a problem to you later in the process anyway. So, and really, I mean, that's one of the reasons that we're all here in this working group, because it's become a bit of a hassle doing that. So I'd be suggesting that what we need to do is say we do need to deal with this question 3 under D. And therefore, say, a triggering mechanism, which can be proactive or reactive, needs to be in place, and a response to such a triggering mechanism needs to occur. And now I'll shut up. Thank you.
Okay, Tom? I'm sorry, Stephanie, I apologize. And then we'll get to you,
yeah,
Tom.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Thanks. I think, in a way, I'm kind of following up what this conversation has been dealing with. And again, caveats. I'm basing my observations on EWG, which was different and struck to break a log jam, and therefore presumably somewhat different, and on the Privacy Proxy Services Accreditation Working Group, which I am told is a typical working group. But the thing I'd like to point out is definitions. In my history, which has been, you know, on policy development and on standards development, you can spend easily a year arguing about definitions. And on both of these working groups, we went ahead and did things using terms that weren't defined. And I'm puzzled. I'm scratching my head about this, because I think it's abnormal. You would not get away with that in a, well, let me point to the cryptography policy working group, where we had 100 guys show up to fight about definitions. That doesn't seem to happen as much as ICANN, possibly because there is so much emphasis on moving fast and getting things implemented. Is that possible? But if you implement something without having agreed on your terms, let me point to privacy and proxy services, then what you're saying doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Okay. Tom?
Yeah, I guess I have a slightly different take on this. And I think if you take implementation separately, then someone is always going to find policy issues within how something's being implemented. So I would rather take it differently and first ask, is something being implemented consistent with a defined policy? And if it's not, then are new policy issues arising from that? So in terms of the consequences about what's considered policy versus implementation, I think we have to first make sure that someone is verifying that the interpretation of that policy into implementation is consistent with what people expected. And then if it's not consistent, they can ask, is it being implemented in a way that gives rise to new policy?
Okay. So, and this is Jay Scott for the record. Let me pose a question, and then I'll come to Alan. To Tom, under the GNSO policy for new GTLDs, there was a policy that said that the new GTLD program would contain adequate protections for third-party rights. And out of that came the URS, the Trademark Clearinghouse, and the Claims Service. Now,
you ask your question, is this being implemented consistent with a policy recommendation?
Right.
Yes. But there are a great many people who thought that all of those things were policies.
So a very specific example there, J. Scott, was, you know, whether the policy was simply as you stated, or if it was more specific and talked about, you know, exact rights, exact strengths. And so there is the question is when that rights protection was expanded to include strings that were subject to UDRPs, was that implementation or is that making new policies?
Yeah, I think as it expanded, but I agree. So I was just saying that I see that that may be a very simplistic way to go about it, because I think an argument could be made by those that question could be answered differently depending who was answering it. I'm going to see Alan and then Marika.
Why don't we let Marika go first?
Okay, Marika.
Thanks, Alan. This is Marika. So one of the comments I had, and I know we've been talking about, you know, the council role in this, but I think in the recent reality of, you know, policy development, the council has delegated that responsibility basically to implementation review teams. And they're basically specifically tasked to closely follow along with staff as they implement the policy recommendation to verify that the implementation is conform the intent of the policy recommendations in the first place. And it also specifically outlines in the PDP manual that there's a, you know, a triggering mechanism by which an implementation review team can actually go back to the council and advise that the policy is actually not being implemented as was intended, and, you know, staff is either going too far or not far enough in line with the recommendations. And that, again, has a triggering mechanism that the council can initiate by going to the board and basically asking the board to hold off on implementation until there is clarification on what is going on. So I think to a certain extent, as we're looking at implementation review teams, you know, as one of our deliverables, I'm expecting actually that part of that conversation will actually happen in that context, because what is at the same time also very true is that there is not a whole lot of detail or rules around implementation review teams. For example, you know, we haven't specified anywhere whether, you know, should there be a consensus at the implementation review team level before something gets deferred back to the council. Is it one person that can raise their hand and say, hey, I think this is, you know, actually policy what staff is making instead of implementation? So I think that's where probably more of this conversation will happen as well. And, you know, one of the questions I actually asked in the preparatory call is, as one of the objectives, of course, of this working group is to have clearer processes and frameworks in place, doesn't that in the end of the day still matter whether something is policy or implementation, as long as we all feel comfortable that all the processes in place are, you know, based on multi-stakeholder, you know, bottom-up conversations and input? Hopefully at a certain point in time, it doesn't become any more this, you know, is it this or is it that, but it's like, which process are we going to use, and do we feel comfortable that, you know, all stakeholders can have their views expressed and we follow a clear path that is, you know, predictable and transparent for anyone that is either affected or impacted by the issues that are being discussed.
Okay, thanks, Marika. Alan?
Thank you. A couple of things. On the issue that Stephanie brought up on definitions, it may well be that the expert working group proceeded to talk about words without defining them. My recollection is, in fact, it did do some definitions, certainly on, I may be wrong on that. That's my memory. PDP working groups that I've worked on over the last couple of years have either blundered into doing definitions or being led into it or required to do it based on the leadership. Certainly this group and I was the one who pushed in that way, did do a lot of definitions. The locking PDP that I was heavily involved in did definitions. We realized as we went along that we were using words that were not defined, and that was one of the problems that people were implementing them different ways because they weren't defined. And so I think we're starting to understand that definitions are critical and have to be worked on. So there may well be cases where they're not being done properly, but I think that's something that we're on a path to fixing. And certainly going back 3-4 years, definitions have been a very significant part of the work that a good number of PDPs have done. On the issue of, going back to the elephant in the room, the new GTLD requirement that there be adequate protection without defining adequate has led to pretty much everything that's blown up over the last little while, or at least much of it, including the existence of this working group itself. I think it becomes critical that the GTLD PDP very, very clearly did not try to define things in detail and left it as implementation. As a result, as Jay Scott said, the Trademark Clearinghouse, the URS, and all of that were developed as implementation. The special, STC?
STI.
Yeah. If you go back to the report that it generated on the first page, it says, this is not policy, it is the implementation. And therefore, everything that followed out of it was implementation. So the discussion of whether the trademark plus 50 was implementation or not, which again led directly to this working group, was something that people did not think about, because if that STI working group, had in its wisdom said trademark plus 50 is one of the things you can put in the trademark clearinghouse, it would have been cast in concrete as an implementation practice. That group didn't make that decision, and therefore it caused a lot of problems. So the new GTLD process consciously set the level differently than normal for policy versus implementation. It consciously walked away from it and said, we're not going to set things in more detail than this. That may, in retrospect, have been a bad mistake, and we probably won't do something like that again.
Thanks, Alan. Well, then, moving to the next question, why does it matter something policy or implementation? From listening to what Alan just had to say, this is Jay Scott for the record, that what you said at the end was, if this group had made that determination, there would have been no question about it if the STI had. So it looks like that is the importance of being policy or implementation who makes the decisions? Is that the importance? Is that why it matters? I ask that to the group. Marika, is your hand up?
Yes.
Please.
So this is Marika. It's partly as well in response to what Alan was saying before, because I think as well the whole conversation that happened, for example, on the trade for Clearinghouse Plus 50, and again, this is my personal opinion, is it completely distracted by the question of is it policy or implementation. If the council believed that it was policy, they should have just initiated a PDP. Instead of actually debating whether it was policy or implementation, they could have just said, look, we're going to initiate a PDP and do policy development on this one because we believe that this is a policy issue that we want to address. But instead, I think everyone got distracted by actually the chicken egg conversation. Well, I think, again, and coming back to the point I made before, if we have clear processes in place, hopefully we don't need to discuss anymore whether it's policy or implementation. Council will just decide, this is the process we're going to use to address this question. Whether it is policy or implementation, but we have a clear path that we're going to take, and we don't need to debate starting out of that whether something is policy or implementation, because I think as many people have said, that sometimes in the eye of the beholder, what the answer to that question may be. But as long as there's a clear path that can be taken to address various questions, that indeed all of them have this component of everyone being able to express their views, there's a component of public input consultation, opportunities for others to provide input, a way of, you know, confirming or endorsing that result at the end, and a certain response or reaction that comes from the board, hopefully at that stage it doesn't matter anymore, indeed, whether, you know, what the question is, but you have a framework in place to deal with that.
Okay. Thanks, Marika. Alan?
Yeah, I was drifting in the same direction. If we're talking about post this PD, this working group, and assuming the outcomes of this working group are adopted and accepted, then it almost doesn't matter because we're saying the community must be involved in the implementation also. However, the difference comes in whether it's policy implementation in terms of the depth and the detail and the rigor that we put into making decisions. So it's going to matter, but it won't matter nearly as much as before. And I think Marika hit it on the head, that if indeed everyone in the GNSO thought it was policy, then it should have had a policy process around it. Unfortunately, the GNSO was rather divided, and it's not clear what would have happened if we had gone down that path. It may well have become a policy process because the threshold's pretty low to do that. I may be glad that no one thought of it at the time.
Okay. Thanks, Alan. All right, let's move to the next question, which is, this is Jay Scott for the record. Under what circumstances, if any, may the GNSO Council make recommendations or state positions to the board on matters of policy and implementation as a representative of the GNSO as a whole? Looking at, this is Jay Scott, looking at what's been done in the past, is it was when we were asked specific questions, the GNSO Council was asked specific questions, and the Council provided a written response that the Council developed consensus around. Is that not what we saw when we saw when we went through the specific chart with regards to this and came with our lessons learned, Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika, and again, I think there were some nuances around where we had certain positions where indeed there was disagreement, but I think indeed in general this is the kind of situation where the councillors that are on the council are there representing their stakeholder groups and constituencies. So I think part of the assumption is in certain discussions that indeed if there are no objections raised or made to a certain position, that reflects the view of the GNSO as, you know, council members are there representing the different groups. And we have seen instances where people have raised the flag and said, okay, we're not comfortable with this yet, we need to discuss this with our groups or either come back with suggestions. But we did see as well one example where indeed there was disagreement, there definitely was no unanimous consensus, and I think in the end there was a vote on I don't remember which letter, but a certain letter where I think in the letter it did say in the end that not everyone supported it. So I think in those circumstance, the question is indeed, you know, does that then, can the council speak on behalf of the GNSO, or indeed if it's clearly reflected what the level of support was, it just follows the same rule as on any other motion that is voted on, you know, where in certain cases that's simple majority and, you know, it passes, and in other cases it may be supermajority. So should that work the same way in developing these kind of positions? You know, do you have a simple majority voting threshold, and that then reflects the GNSO position, or do you need something else in these kind of circumstances?
Okay. Alan?
Thank you. As rules stand right now, I think the answer to this is under what circumstances. The circumstances is all circumstances except when the recommendation is a consensus policy, capital P, capital C, capital P, and alters contracts, in which case the bylaws mandate that you must go through a PDP. In all other cases, I believe council has the right to do this, and Marika, you know, made it pretty clear that council is simply composed of, with the exception of the NOMCOM appointees, representatives of the various stakeholder groups. Now, I think one could ask further, however, should it be able to do that, and if so, with what kind of majority voting? Is simple majority sufficient? Does it have to go out for public comment on certain classes of decisions? Those questions, I think, are fair game, but certainly as it stands right now, any recommendation of the GNSO Council is a recommendation of the GNSO. And, you know, that's why the GNSO is there, to make formal decisions that have the weight of the GNSO behind them.
Okay. Thank you, Alan. I think the question of just J. Scott Evans, what voting threshold, is an interesting one, and it's one we should consider. Because I do think you're talking about speaking for the entire GNSO, and, you know, when there's not unanimity, you may want to have a pretty high threshold, you know, in those instances. So let's do one more question for today. I think we've already... I'm sorry, Marika, I didn't see your hand. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. This is one point I wanted to make to this specific question, because I think it's very relevant as well as we're looking at, you know, developing a policy guidance process, and I think we spoke about it before, indeed, is that if we develop a process that, you know, creates certain obligations as well on the board to respond, what indeed would be the appropriate voting threshold? Are we looking then as well, you know, at a supermajority vote, you know, something in between simple majority and supermajority, or is this also just a simple majority vote? So I think it's an important question that everyone probably should give some thought, and as we, you know, start probably mapping out what such a process should look like, indeed think as well about what would be reasonable, you know, in light of that, you know, such a process would potentially trigger, you know, a kind of reaction or response from the board. So I think we do want to make sure that it's seen as something that does indeed have a certain weight and indeed represents really the, you know, the voice or consensus, at least, of the council, versus there's something that may just, you know, slip through because it has you know, just enough people on board to get it passed. So just wanted to flag that. I think that is one of the issues where we probably do need to get back to at some point and you know, have people start thinking about that.
Thank you, Marika. So let's do one more. And I think we've already discussed this. This is J. Scott for the record. And a couple of times earlier, question D, how do we avoid the current morass of outcome-derived labeling? That is, I will call this policy because I want a certain consequence. And as I've heard in our discussions today, it seems to me that the way to do that is have clearly defined processes, and in each of those processes, it be set out that there's a, you know, an ability for community input into those processes, so people don't feel like they've been left out of the consideration process and eventual recommendation. Michael?
Michael Graham, J. Scott, I agree. I think it's essential that there be established processes, and I think at this point, too, this is an excellent place where something like an IRT can form a essential role. I think at the same time, we will probably, as long as we have differing ideas and such and different goals in the processes, we will never get away from someone claiming this type of thing. But I think by putting in, as a matter of course, requirements and the ability for the community to take part in those, that we address it in a way that is answerable going forward.
Okay.
Thank you, Michael.
Okay.
All right.
Jay Scott, sorry, I'm driving. Cheryl here. Sorry to jump in. I just want to agree totally with what's just been said. As one of the reigning queens of process, I've been delighted to hear where this conversation is going. I really do think that process is the answer here, and it needs to be pre-established and clearly defined with a lot of common understanding. And that's very much where I'm assuming this work group will start putting some guidelines together. And that should be, again, capital G guidelines, strongly recommended to follow, if not actual rules. And to be honest, GNSO might want to consider looking at these as rules rather than guidelines, although I know that's a big ask in the GNSO world. Now I'll go back onto mute again.
Okay. Well, with regard to that, I'm going to suggest that we ask staff to do something that we talked about in our London meeting, and that is to put together sort of a decision tree that we can begin to look at that would sort of pass this through a flow, a workflow, and that we can look at with regards to this, and then we can begin to then refine, and then from that, hopefully develop a recommended process for this that hopefully will take into consideration many of the concerns and answer in a positive fashion, or at least in a more efficient fashion, some of the questions we've been asking ourselves today. So if that is something that we would, everyone would be willing to, you know, let staff take an initial draft for us to consider, so that we can then begin to spur our conversations off something a bit more concrete. And then once we are, you know, satisfied with the decision tree, then begin to build a process that works off that and describes and clarifies how each step in that process would work. Does that sound like, I see that Stephanie is agreeing with that.
Yep.
Okay, and Michael. So that's what I would suggest. And then I think that we can do that. Now, lastly, we're not going to have time to do it today because I want to hold us to our timeline. But we have received comments from three groups. Received comments from ALAC, from the registries, and I can't remember the third group. And we just discussed it in the call before. But there are three groups. Oh, the ISPCP. We sent out some questions to them. We received some feedback. And I'd like everyone to consider teams of two or three that would agree to look at these comments and see if we have go through these questions and see if we have answered, you know, we've considered the things they've raised, or if we need to incorporate them into this document as things that we should remember as we move forward. And I would like you all to think about that for our next call so that we can do that, so that we can move this work forward. And hopefully, Marika, do you think you can have an outline for the beginning of a decision tree for us by next week?
This is Marika. I definitely hope so.
Okay. So that's where we'll start. I'd like to start next week with assigning those groups and then to start looking at this decision tree. Is everyone...
Jay Scott, Cheryl here. You're going to put that assignment of groups, teams of two, to the list, aren't you? Because you don't have a whole lot of people here today.
I'm sorry, Cheryl, I didn't understand what you were saying.
I was saying with the assignment of teams of two for the comments review, you're going to put that to the list, aren't you? Because you don't have
absolutely.
A whole lot of people.
That will be to the list. That will be to the list. And I would ask you all to be considering it as well, yes, because there are only... unfortunately, I'm a little disappointed in our turnout. But again, it is heavy vacation season again, as I mentioned at the beginning of our call. Alan, I see your hand.
That's an error. I'm not sure when it went up, but I will make a snarky comment. I didn't think vacations were allowed from GNSO working groups.
Oh, ha, ha, ha. So that's where we are. We'll meet again at this same time next week. I thank you all for your time. I want to really thank everyone, especially Stephanie, who's new to attending on a regular basis, for jumping right in and asking hard questions and making us think through things that we may have already felt were thought through. It's always good to be challenged. And to Alan and Cheryl for their input, and Michael. And let's look forward to next week on starting to hammer out, outlining a rough outline for a process, and then considering the comments we've received from the various groups so we can wrap that into our work and then move this to the next step. Okay?
Thanks, Jacob.
Thank you all.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you, everyone. Bye.
Once again, that does conclude today's conference call. Marcella, if you can please stop the recordings. And thank you, everyone, for joining today's conference.